You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is Jericho, baby.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. Let's go for a ride with Larry King and his lovely wife, Sean King. They're doing a podcast together on Podcast One. It's called Back and Forth with Sean and Larry King. They're interviewing people. They're talking to each other. And today, you'll hear all about the inner workings of their relationship. You'll hear what Larry thinks of his wife as an interviewer. He's got some thoughts on AC/DC, social media, hanging out with the presidents, including JFK, and the one celebrity who left Larry King starstruck. He couldn't even talk, man. Exactly. And my other guest, well, we just had WWE Extreme Rules, and my old friend Lance Storm is going to go through the matches, the highlights, the lowlights, the quality of the show. I might as well do it right now. All right, so this past week we had the 2015 Extreme Rules pay-per-view available on the WWE Network, and you're an idiot if you bought it on pay-per-view, according to the WWE. And with me right now to discuss, analyze, and tear apart one of the most honest men in the wrestling business, which is an anomaly, my old buddy Lance Storm. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. And thankfully, I got the pay-per-view on the network, so I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, it always it makes me laugh, though, because they're really doing the hard sell. Or if you have bought this pay-per-view in this archaic, old-school way, that you're really, they're basically saying you're stupid.
Yeah, and I don't know why you want to insult fans. Just be happy they're buying your product.
That's in this day and age, right? So did you see the whole show? You watched everything?
Yeah, I watched it on delay, but I watched the whole show.
What did you think of the show as a whole?
I think as long as you don't think too hard, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I, you know what, man? I think that that's kind of the secret to wrestling in general. I mean, what you just said is the motto. It's like the meaning of life as a wrestling fan. If you don't think too much, most of the time it's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, I wish we could think a little bit more, but I think if you want to enjoy it, which, you know, generally is, you know, the goal with entertainment, you have to put your brain in your back pocket a little bit and just enjoy it as best you can. And I think if you do that, it was a pretty good show. There were a few things that I found frustrating, but...
Well, we'll get into that. And make a note of the things that you found frustrating. I'm sure you'll bring it up. But before we start, I wanted to ask you, how do you like watching the pay-per-views or anything via the WWE Network?
I love the on-demand aspect of it. I've got a busy life with, you know, two kids and a wife. It gets hard to sit down at an appropriate time and watch it. So being able to just grab my iPad and move it and do what I want. I ended up watching a lot of this show doing cardio this morning. So I find it really easy, and I like the network for its travelability, I guess.
I think a lot of people are starting to figure that out now and find that out, because I just started getting into the network, I guess, probably around the beginning of the year. And I was like you. It's like, or maybe not like you, but at first I was like a lot of people, is what I meant to say, in that you're like, well, I don't know if I want to get the network, and what is this really, and how good is it going to be, and it's too much hassle. But then all it takes is just signing up and watching one show, and you realize just how convenient it is. And I think that now that the word is getting out and people are starting to understand it, it's got nothing but a huge, huge future ahead of it. And I think they're going to be making money hand over fist probably the next year or two when it jumps from $1 million to $2 million to $3 million. I think pretty much any fan will probably start getting to this very quickly.
Yeah, I think once you realize that $10 is not a lot of money in the course of a week. Like, most people spend more than that on coffee in a day or two.
Right.
And as long as there's one show on it that you like, it's worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether you like NXT or whether you like the pay-per-views or whether you just like the specials, they like your podcast segment, if you watch more than two shows a month on the network, it's $10.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's nothing. You know, it's nothing.
Yeah, it really is.
But let's start with the show. Did you watch the pre-show match with Barrett and Neville?
I did not.
Okay.
I joined at the start of the pay-per-view.
I watched that match, and it's funny to me because, I mean, it was an amazing match because, you know, Neville is one of those rare guys. He's very explosive. He does the stuff that no one's ever seen or hasn't seen, you know, very regularly. And you can never replace Rey Mysterio. And I know they were trying so hard with Sin Cara and trying to find another, you know, luchador, another Mexican guy. I think they might have found another guy with the same quality of wrestling style as Neville and kind of stumbled upon him. Now, obviously, Neville doesn't have the gimmick that Rey did, but as far as just being a performer, he's the next closest thing that I've seen in a long time to a guy like Rey Mysterio.
And I think the key to that is he's not too close.
Right.
I think when you try to go with a luchador with a mask, it's just, you can't replace Rey with Rey. There's no one that's Rey. Where Neville, he's English, he's looks different, he moves different, but he has that same special quality.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I like most about Neville is, even if he didn't fly, his groundwork and his wrestling is really great too.
Yeah, he's got that English background, you know, and that's another thing that I really enjoy about that match, especially with Barrett. I know you didn't see it, but Barrett has that style too. I mean, Barrett is very much, you know, I don't want to compare him to like a William Regal or a Finlay because it's a different animal, but he has that very believable quality to him, especially when working with a smaller guy. Even though Neville's jacked, I mean, that guy's massive. His genetics are insane, but it was a really cool, hard-hitting, hard-nosed English style match that you would see if you were over, you know, in London or over in Bremen or something along those lines.
Yeah, they're both really talented. I'm a big fan of both.
Okay, so then the actual pay-per-view starts, and it's the street fight with Ambrose and Luke Harper. One of those ones that they, you know, kind of like the Gold Dust Roddy Piper, where they probably filmed some of it beforehand. They started it, they stopped it. What did you think of this?
I thought it was a neat idea, having them leave.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have just seen something when they were gone, whether we could have got a camera following them somewhere. It took away from, and this is my overall view with the show, it was sort of hokey and funny and lighthearted when they left. And when it's supposed to be extreme and it's a Chicago street fight, I think it hurt the violence element that these types of matches should have.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an interesting idea that didn't really help the match any.
Well, I mean, and that's anytime you have a match that starts and stops that way. I remember they used to do it with the hardcore title, or you have to go backstage for those type of things. Whenever you take the match out of the arena, especially when it's in front of the Chicago crowd is universally recognized as one of the best crowds, you know, in the world. As far as you go to Chicago, the city itself, you know, it's always going to be crazy. And by taking it out of the arena, that does hurt it a little bit because you're losing that connection.
Yeah, you lose the emotion, and that's too where these type of matches, you need that emotion. You need to be able to get into it. And by just having the big intermission, for lack of a different term, right in the middle of your match, it does kill the flow and your emotional investment a little bit. So the leaving was a neat idea on paper, but I don't think it translated well.
What do you think of those two guys?
I'm a big fan of both.
Mm-hmm.
The two trips I did to NXT and FCW as a guest trainer, Harper was down there. And I became a big fan of the guy then.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was well before he was on TV. So I think he's a really talented guy. And Ambrose has that something special that you can't teach and you can't really explain. He just has it.
Yeah, I find with Ambrose, he's got that Jeff Hardy X factor by almost not caring. He has made this really huge, cool character because he is very nonchalant. When you talk to the guy, he barely raises his voice over, you know, over a whisper, and he chooses his words carefully, and he's kind of really awkward in a social situation, but he's a great guy, just like Jeff, and he brings that to the table within the ring.
Yeah, and I think to really connect, you've got to be something special. You know what I mean? Rock had it, Jeff Hardy had it, and all different levels, obviously.
Right.
But Dean Ambrose has that he's different. It's like he's not somebody that you meet every day in your life, and it's like a cool guy you'd like to hang around with because he's different.
Yeah,
he really works. He's got something special.
Eccentric might be the word, you know. Then we move on to the, and I love when they put these stipulations out there. Okay, so it's the Kiss My Arse match, right? Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler. There's no way you can win with a finish like that. So you know it has to be some kind of a screw job or a kabuki type finish, because you can't put two guys that are kind of in the primes of their careers and have them kiss the other's ass. It doesn't work, and why they book them or paint themselves in that corner, it always makes me wonder.
Yeah, the match itself I thought was good, and the post match up until they didn't deliver the stipulation, I thought was so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that dynamic of the heel getting caught with a "oh crap," you know what I mean, and
right.
him selling it—it's like the old school manager that has to, you know, get in the ring for the five more minutes, and it's that. The three-minute stall of him getting in is the real entertainment part. And I thought Sheamus did a phenomenal job of selling it and building it up, and they were both really into it. I'm like, this is what I love about wrestling. It's so fun. And then they screwed me, and I really left a bitter taste in my mouth. I would have rathered him reluctantly done it and then broke-kicked him.
Hmm.
So they at least delivered the stipulation. But when you rob us, it leaves a bitter taste in my mouth.
You know, that's actually a pretty interesting point, because, I mean, obviously, Sheamus is coming back as the big, you know, killer heel, and as he should. You know, he needed and we're going to be talking to him on Friday, and he tells us about how he needed a gimmick change and a gimmick update. So I was like, there's no way Sheamus can kiss the ass. And, of course, Ziggler, if he kisses the ass as the baby face, especially with the history he's had, he's dead. But it would have been interesting for Sheamus to have to do that and then just kill Ziggler, like kick his ass even worse than he did. That might have worked better. I think you're right about that. It's a good point.
Yeah, because I there was a lot of stipulations that weren't strictly honored on this show, and I think that hurts when you're selling a stipulation show.
Yeah, I agree, and especially when, like you said, with the look he could have had on his face, and you know, I'm sure it's one of those things where they want him to be the killer heel, and that's cool, but then don't put him in this situation in the first place, you know.
Yeah, but I think too. As a heel, sometimes having to do something like that can add to your heat, because it gives them something for the crowd to get on him, especially if he's going to go on a tear and destroy people, then they've got that one thing that they can, you know, get on him about. It's much like when a heel tapped out and the crowd did the "you tapped out," it just gives you that universal heat you can use going forward. And as long as, you know, it was a schoolboy or a roll-up that got, small package, that got him. So it's like he didn't get bested physically, and the fact that he left, you know, while Ziggler was laying, I think he could have reluctantly done a quick peck on the cheek of Ziggler's butt, and it wouldn't have killed him.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, and it would add a different dimension to the character. But so the new tag team champions, New Day beating Kidd and Cesaro. What did you think?
I thought this was the match of the night. I thought this was fantastic.
I have to agree with you on that, and I'll tell you my reasons after you tell me yours.
Action-packed, it felt fresh, it was exciting, it was up-tempo, and I think as much as, you know, everyone likes to say that New Day sucks, I think they just mean the gimmick does. The guys are actually really great,
mm-hmm.
and now that the gimmick is them as heels, it's a great gimmick, too. It felt like everyone in the match, at the end of the match, I liked all of them more, and if you can get everybody in the match more over, and the quality was good. It was exciting. I just thought it was fantastic.
I agree with you, and I'll tell you the reasons why on my end. The moment New Day, because I've been obviously a fan of Kofi's for years, never had a bad match with the guy, and Big E as well. Big E is really, really good. And talking with Xavier Woods, I know this guy's very smart. He's into his passionate. The moment those guys walked in with the New Day, I was thinking to myself, that is the worst babyface gimmick I've ever seen in my life, but it will be one of the best heel gimmicks. I told them that. And I said, this is a babyface. Yeah, we're going to do this. I said, this is not a good babyface gimmick, but when it turns heel, you guys are going to be loving it. And I don't know if they really understood what I was saying. And I'd have to say that Vince McMahon, in the back of his mind, knew that, because why else would you put that gimmick on TV as a babyface? It's terrible. It's a terrible gimmick.
Yeah, and it's funny too, and it more so today than before. And I know you've mentioned this to me before, way back when. It's like the best way to get over as a babyface is start as a heel.
Yes.
And in a lot of cases now, the best way to be a heel is to start as a babyface.
Absolutely.
And it certainly worked for New Day. And the spot of the match for me, and it was probably the least exciting for most people, but I just thought it was brilliant. And I no doubt they come up with it on house shows. But it was when Kid and Cesaro were stomping, I think it was Big E, I don't remember which, doesn't matter which one. They're stomping down Kofi in the corner, and they were stomping to the beat of the New Day Stuck chant.
Yeah.
And it's like the crowd, I'm like, this is just brilliant.
It's like that Shaun of the Dead when they're beating the zombie up to the Queen music. Dan, 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 you know. And that's the thing that I love, too, is that I think Kid and Cesaro, to me, have really big potential as kind of a, bear with me here, as a modern-day Rockers, as in this tag team that has all of these cool double teams, and they're two great workers together. And they kind of were dismissed at first. I think, you know, Cesaro, we've heard all the trials and tribulations about not having personality, and Tyson is the same. But now they're getting over just because they're so damn good. They're so entertaining. You know, they're you know, giant swing into the dropkick type stuff. That's great, great stuff that people like to see. It's very explosive.
Yeah, and the crowd's going with them. They really like it. I can't say enough about that match. That made the show for me.
I agree, and I was really happy for all four, and especially the New Day guys, because I would see them backstage when I was back this summer. And it's disheartening when you're, you know, and I know how it feels, and I'm sure you do too, when you're the miscast babyface, and you know people are just hating you, and there's nothing you can do about it. But thankfully, the WWE Brain Trust saw that and just had them do the exact same thing and let the people change it. And now you wait and see. They're going to be big, big heels. And I'm excited about the tag team division because those guys, it reminds me of the Usos against Wyatt, the Wyatt family in the summer, where they had great matches like 10 weeks in a row, and I think these guys will be the same.
And I think, too, that I was so glad that they did the title switch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the last year or so, there's been a lot of pulling the trigger at the wrong time where it just felt like it was the time to do it, and they held off, or they did it too soon.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think if New Day didn't win, it would hurt their credibility with, oh, they just suck.
Right.
That they walked out with those titles and did that great celebration, it's like, I think it really gave them what they needed at the exact moment they needed it.
Yeah, it was perfect timing for that. And that's, you know, when you, like you said, if you just close your eyes and don't think too much, wrestling ain't rocket science. But sometimes, you know, everybody thinks too much, and they wait, and that's what happens. But look, let's move on to the chain match with Rusev versus Cena. This is the third pay-per-view match they've had in a row. They announced last night that there's going to be a fourth match next pay-per-view. Chain matches are not easy matches to have.
No, and they're even harder to have in a PG environment.
How do you mean?
To me, and this is where the match struggled for me, is that with the bright lights of WWE and the, you know, the bright lights on the top of the turnbuckles.
And you mean like the green light or whatever?
Green light, yeah. And red light. That it feels a little cartoony. Even down to the fact that this unbreakable Russian chain, you very clearly saw them use Velcro to attach it. Harkening back to, you know, Ivan Koloff, Nikita Koloff, where it's like, they'd beat people to death. It'd be bloody, and they'd be all tied up, and it'd be violent. And you'd get into the, you know, oh, my God, the violence of these two beasts tied together. But when you can't do that violent, it becomes a tug-of-war.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it reminded me of when they first started the Elimination Chamber, when they would play this Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Deal or No Deal music before the next pod opened up. It would be like, do 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 or something like that. It kills.
Remember that? It was in the afternoon before the show, and it's like the light show and the music starts, and everybody's like, they're not really going to do that, are they?
Yeah, it's like the most dangerous structure ever built, and let's play, you know, Alex Trebek's theme song before somebody comes out. And I find that with the change match, because I remember, you know, like the famous Piper versus Valentine Russian chain match where there's bleeding and there's, you know, but this one, like you said, it seems like A, like a tug of war, and B, like a scavenger hunt. Okay, I've touched the first one. Oh, now I have. And, you know, it's a tough match to have. I think those guys have good chemistry. I'm glad it's not the last match, But I'm also a little bit scared. It seems like they might be working towards some kind of a split between Lana and Rusev.
Yeah, that's... It seems way too soon.
Yeah.
It felt just out of the blue.
Even just to tease it.
Yeah, but even just the about face in the character dynamic.
Yeah.
The, you know, she's been ordering him around. You know, Rusev Kush, and he does her bidding. And then all of a sudden she's timid and he's yelling at her, and I'm like, when did this happen?
Yeah, good point. Good point.
It just felt rushed. It's like inevitable. Like, you know it's going to happen, but it just seems that both are better served being together at the moment.
Well, yeah, and especially with that dynamic, if you're going to go into the Elizabeth Macho Man dynamic, or maybe that's what they want to do, but what was babyface Elizabeth when she was away from Macho? What would babyface Lana be if she's away from Rusev? And the reason why I say this is a couple years ago, when they had Alberto Del Rio and his ring announcer, Ricardo Rodriguez, it was a great act. You haven't seen anything like it. And when they broke them up, Alberto was less off for it, and Ricardo was basically gone, done.
Yeah, I would see that and raise Miz and Alex Riley and Miz and Mizdow.
Yeah, good point. You're right.
Sometimes it's the act that works, and there might be... I don't know what you do with her once they split up, because she can't feud with them, and... If she's just the next diva.
Yeah, she loses her uniqueness. Hey, I'll even throw in there Virgil and Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. Same thing happened, too.
Yep.
Virgil. At least Virgil got to wrestle for years later. Look, look. I'm going to give you an armbar. Look, look. I'm looking. I'm looking right at you. Stop saying that. You would always talk that way. Look, look, look. I'm going to give you a big hip toss. Look, look, look. Drop kick. All right. I'm looking. I'm here. Next, we had Nikki Bella versus Naomi for the Divas title. What'd you think of the girls this night?
Nothing against what they did, but just the way this match was booked, I didn't know why I should care.
In what way?
Well, the Bellas were in the babyface role, and they've been despicable, horrible heels for about a year and a half. And Naomi turned heel by pointing out the obvious truth that she's been pinning the Bellas, and she's not the one getting the title shot, and she's upset about it. So I'm like, well, Naomi's right. And the fact that she comes out with new gear and new entrance, and I'm like, I want to like her.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm supposed to like Nikki, because they haven't given me a reason to. So whenever Naomi's, you know, got Nikki in a hold, I'm like, I don't want to cheer for her.
Yeah.
I haven't liked her for the last year and a half. And because of that, I just couldn't get emotionally into it, even though what they did was, for the most part, pretty good.
It seems to me, too, I noticed this at WrestleMania, and I noticed it tonight. I don't know if they're giving the girls a little bit extra time or if the girls are trying harder, but they know what is going on in NXT. You know what I mean? They know that those girls down there are tearing it up. And I'm talking about Charlotte, I'm talking about Sasha Banks, I'm talking about Bayley, those type of girls. And it seems to me that the girls in the big leagues are trying to step up their game because they know that they got the competition kind of nipping at their heels from behind.
Yeah, and I think they can. Certainly some of them, not all of them, can raise to the occasion. But to me, until the angles at least get them in the emotional spot that they need to be, it's harder for us to care and it's mm-hmm. harder for them to get over. And I think the real downfall to the Divas division has been Total Divas.
How do you mean?
Well, it's just... A lot of the turning face and heel is because they need it on the Total Divas show.
Oh.
And the girls that are on the Total Divas show need to be the focus on Raw, and they can't just book the women well on Raw because they have to make it coincide with Total Divas. And I think it hurts the overall women's division, if you will. And since NXT can just book a women's division, it's awesome.
Yeah. There's a disconnect, too, because I don't watch Total Divas, so I don't know what's going on that show. So when they're doing angles that I'm supposed to know because it's on Total Divas, I don't care.
Yeah, I watched like the first 15 minutes of the first episode of season one. So other than that, I'm out of the loop too.
Yeah, it's not my bag. You know, it's Kardashians and that sort of stuff is fine if you're into it. And conversely, there's a lot of people who listen or who watch Total Divas that never watch Raw. There's a lot of girls I know watch that show and don't care about wrestling. So there is a disconnect between the two. But I do think that over the next few months that you're going to see a couple of those NXT girls come up, and hopefully they leave them alone to do some of the great stuff they've been doing down in Orlando.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope Naomi gets to work with a lot of them, too, because I'm a big fan of hers.
Yeah, she's great, man. Absolutely. I don't know if I like those lighted shoes, though. She got some...
Stealing heat from your jacket.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and speaking of getting over, I think the experiment continues, and it's working with Roman Reigns and Big Show, because for me, besides the tag team match, this was my favorite match of the night. And
yeah, this would be in at number two.
Yeah, and for similar reasons as I used your quote about WrestleMania, put Brock Lesnar and a Samoan in the ring together, they're going to beat the crap out of each other, and it's going to be good. And I found that last night with Big Show and Reigns in the Last Man Standing match.
Yeah, I think this match would have fared better if they didn't have the other Extreme Rules matches on the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was for the most part pretty good. I think the fact that I was watching it this morning doing cardio, I lost a little bit of the emotion from it. But there was enough big bumps, big stunts, and drama getting up that I think making it look like, and he is, you know, making him earn it by physically demanding matches, I think is a good way to go with Reigns. His support was, I'd say, probably 60-40, 70-30 at the beginning, but it felt like it was close to 100 at the end.
In Chicago, yeah. No less, too, because Chicago's not a hardcore fan base, but they're very vocal.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they'll voice their opinion if they have one.
Right.
But, I think they're doing a good job in that crowds, and I don't understand why, they're still enamored with tables and table bumps. And Reigns kept trying to deliver, and show kept robbing him of it. So when Reigns finally delivered, it's like mission accomplished.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing for babyfaces. You've got to deliver and be mission accomplished eventually. And Roman Reigns is doing it, and I enjoyed it. Show works his butt off.
I was just going to say that Show is one of the most underrated performers in WWE history, in that he's been there for over 15 years, and he's still, I mean, he's a big man. He's 43, 44 years old, and he still works hard, and he knows what to do. And by putting Reigns with him was a very smart move. I watched the house show matches that they were having over the last few months, and they had one in Edmonton that was amazing, same style. And that's when I heard Reigns getting cheered through the roof. You know, this ain't no half and half, and you're not putting him in there with a guy that people are going to cheer for. No one's going to cheer for Big Show over Roman Reigns. They're just not. It's not the same dynamic. So it was a really smart move to put them in there, and Show did a great job of putting him over.
Yeah, and I hope this is the end of the feud, because I think Reigns does need to move on. But yeah, Show needs to deserve some credit for the bumping he does at his size and his age. He works hard.
And Reigns, too, just one last thing. I remember when they were starting the trek to get Orton over as a babyface, and he worked with Mick Foley and took the bump into the thumbtacks. And that was kind of a turning point for Randy, because people stopped seeing him as a pretty boy, if anybody did, and saw him as this guy thumbtacks in his back. It's very easy to see that's a guy who's gonna feel the pain for the craft. And I thought some of the bumps that Reigns took last night, you know, getting choke slammed through the table over the ropes and all that sort of stuff, that gets you respect from the quote unquote smarks that don't want to cheer you. You can't help but to cheer a guy when he's giving his body the punishment like Reigns did last night.
Yeah, and I think both him and Orton, when you have the rep of, oh, he's just hand-picked, he's getting the easy way, which is, you know, it's bogus. You know, I saw Randy Orton get his ass handed to him about a month and a half of house shows by, you know, Bob Holly and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, Bob was doing what he was told. They wanted, you know, Randy to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And Randy sucked it up and earned it. And Reigns is showing him, too, that, well, he may be picked, but it's like it's not an easy road no matter which way you go.
Yeah, and speaking of Orton, the main event last night, your main event, the cage match versus Seth Rollins for the title.
I liked what they did enough, but the non-delivering on, for the most part, both stips really frustrated me. And
you're talking about the fact that the RKO was banned from, quote-unquote, banned from the match?
And was used, and the fact that, you know, they build the cage matches. I want this so there's no outside interference, and there was all kinds of it.
Right.
To be honest, I don't know if I would have watched this show if I wasn't going to be going over it with you. And as soon as they announce a cage match anymore, I go, oh, undecisive finish. And it's frustrating. And to do the announcers debating on, well, was the move banned or was he just banned from doing it? And this is where I couldn't turn my brain off to this level. How do you have a world title match headlining a pay-per-view and the referee doesn't even know what the rules are and how you win? Like, if the move is completely banned, or if it was just banned from Randy, the ref should have been clear on that, and the decision should have been rendered as soon as someone threw that RKO. And if the ref doesn't even know the rules specifically, it's like, then the whole thing's a joke, because you sent a world title match out there with a ref that didn't understand the rules.
You know, when I watch movies, I'm pretty wide open, especially if you go see like a sci-fi movie or, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean or whatever. I know there's going to be some fantastic stuff that doesn't really make sense, but you just have to, you know, leave your mind open. Same with if I'm watching Dexter or Walking Dead. But once in a while, you'll see a plot hole where I just can't buy it. Even though it's fantasy and I know it's not real, it insults my intelligence. I feel the same way of the fact it's a nice twist that Rollins gave Orton the RKO. But that should have been Randy Orton cannot use the RKO. Not that the RKO is banned. Also, I find when Kane is named the Guardian of the Gate, that to me is like you're throwing away the stip before you've even started the match. And yeah, that bothers me to an extent. Why would you even bother booking it?
Yeah, there was no reason why you had to announce Kane as the Guardian of the Gate, which silly name. Like, there's no reason why he just couldn't have come out
right
and slammed that door or got the door kicked into him. And then you're not telling people ahead of time. It's like, well, until Kane does his interference at the gate, nothing important is going to happen.
Well, and especially when it's a cage match, man. Like, you know, like you mentioned, it gets watered down over and over again. You know there's going to be some kind of a you know, an interference or whatever. But by advertising, and I know how Vince thinks. He feels by advertising that people will know that, I mean, usually he goes the other way. Like, you'll advertise something where the people will know, okay, Orton is going to win the title. But this tells me right from the start that Rollins is going to retain. So maybe Vince wants people to think that, so they watch the match and buy the match. I don't know why he would want that, but why else would he advertise Kane as the gatekeeper unless he wants you to know that Rollins is going to win? There's no way Orton's going to win when Kane's the gatekeeper.
Yeah, and it's when you mentioned that, you know, they should have specified that Orton can't use the RKO, it's actually an angle I pitched to Paul Heyman back in ECW.
Really?
I had pitched the idea of doing a program with Taz, and I wanted to go out and do the promo about how he's the coddled ECW guy.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, I try to choke somebody in a match, the ref tells me to stop, your finish is a choke.
Right.
I challenge him. It's like every match you've ever won is T-Bone Taz Mission. It's like, I don't think you can beat me without the Taz Mission, and challenge him to a match where he's banned from using his Taz Mission.
Right.
Which is interesting, because at that point, I don't think he'd ever won a match without it. And the finish that I wanted to do was, I end up getting him in the Taz Mission, and then the announcers, it's like, well, he'd never say he couldn't do it, because I would be very specific in my wording.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you tease that as an earfall, I'd have Taz get out, because who should, you know, if anybody knows how to get out of it, it should
right,
be him.
Right, right.
He gets out, and he's so insulted by me doing his move, he puts me in it, and I win by DQ.
Ah, well, that's cool, yeah.
But, and because I watched the show after the fact, I knew that they were doing the, well, what did Seth originally say? And they show the video before the match, where he very clearly says, the RKO is banned in this match.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, it's like...
Yeah, not that you can't do it, but, you know, I don't know, man. You know, sometimes things change the day of. Who knows the finish that they originally were going to do? And then if this was the finish the whole time, they should have changed the wording on that. If it wasn't and they had to change it last minute, or, you know, who knows what the hell's going on, then maybe they were forced to do that. But in my opinion, by saying Randy Orton can't use the RKO, you're not losing anything and you're not giving anything away in the buildup of the match. So, like you said.
Yeah, and then I think Seth Rollins hitting it and rolling out would have been such dirty cheap that it, you know, then there's motivation for Randy to want another piece of him.
Right, exactly. He could still use it, and then, you know, maybe the referee is looking at Kane, Rollins gives Orton the RKO, that's not allowed, but then he beats him with it or whatever it may be, you know, so. But, you know, like I said, you can pontificate it all day long. As a show, it was entertaining. It's not a show that I probably ever would have bought on pay-per-view, but because I had the network, I watched it. And I think you're going to see a lot of that upcoming in the future, whereas it doesn't matter what you put on as the matches, the main event matches, because people are either buying the network or they're not. And I think that the importance of having that specific main event has kind of been diluted quite a lot to where it's almost irrelevant.
To an extent, yeah. I think the primary goal with the network is you need to make the weekly product entertaining and interesting that you enjoy following it. And if you enjoy following the WWE product, it's worth $10.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And then you can watch the shows. And if you, for whatever reason, don't want to watch a show, there's enough else out there that it's still worth the $10. So, yeah, I don't think you need that Hogan-Andre main event anymore. Perhaps for WrestleMania you still do.
Sure, yeah, and SummerSlam, you know, the big ones. But
as long as they can put an entertaining show out there. I think it's ironic that the most entertaining show in the match was the match that wasn't supposed to be on the show.
Oh, the tag team match?
Yeah.
That's always the way, right? Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, Lance. When's your next session at Storm Wrestling Academy?
Starts next Monday. I pick up students this week.
Sold out again?
Yep, sold out. Standing room only.
Standing room only, man. And your guy Tyler Breeze is doing good in NXT, and Emma's doing good. You got a couple other signees. I know there's a girl from Australia that just signed up. So you keep cultivating those students that end up in NXT, which is great.
Yeah, it's always exciting when you see another student get signed and get the opportunity.
All right, man. Calling from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. It's Lance Storm. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Bye.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, are we on? No, we're moving. We're just going.
We're just conversating.
Wow. Yeah,
didn't you tell us who the guest is?
Well, I'm going to tell.
Okay. I don't want to help you.
No, let him guess.
The one thing I've learned, if you can't tell by the voice, is obviously legendary interviewer, show business mogul Larry King.
Mogul?
Mogul.
She's the mogul.
Mogul's also, and of course, his lovely wife, Sean, is here. And the coolest thing is that I've done a lot of interviews over the years, and one of my favorite interviewers has always been you, Larry King. We've had the pleasure of doing your show maybe four times, maybe five times. And it's always a blast to talk to you because I love how you ask your questions, how you run the show.
Warm them in, yeah.
Yeah, and now, you know, you are here on my show, so it's a little bit of an intimidating.
And on the way
Chris
over,
is the boss.
On the way over, yes, my I'm bold wife said, she looked at me in the car, mm-hmm. which occasionally she does.
Yeah, once in a while.
And she said, I'm going to take him. I said, what do you mean? She says, you know, he won't be too resisting.
And yeah, I know.
I look kind of cute.
That sounds funny.
I'll belt him and pin him to the floor.
Using her as, exactly.
I was going to take you down. I was just going to walk in.
But what I did, I would have to just subside, let you do it. Succumb. See, you got
we
all
were
the
on WWE together.
I know you guys hosted Raw.
And the guy put me on and she threw water in his face.
Yeah.
Well, you've always been a very, not always, but I know for a while, you've had a lot of WWE guys on your show.
Oh, many, many, many.
There was one time when actually you came to Anaheim to do kind of a behind the scenes story.
That was a lot of fun. I've known Vince McMahon for years, and a lot of the wrestlers and you. And I think wrestling, I took my boys to a big event the day before WWE on a Saturday morning. They did a whole event here downtown.
Is this something that you have been interested in your whole life or just recently?
Well, I remember watching Rocca when I was a kid, and wrestling was the first thing to be big on television.
Yeah.
It was the first thing.
Really?
Big. Oh,
like on the DuPont Network?
Yeah, DuPont Network with round screens and and wrestling. And Antonino Rocca from Argentina was the first big rock wrestling star, and he would stand against the ropes and jump out and leap onto people and kick them in the face. And I bought it.
Yeah.
And Costas, Bob Costas, still buys it. I've had arguments with him. Costas says, you know, it is real. How could they hit it? And I know you get hurt a lot, and I know you're great athletes.
Well,
I have a lot of... It's
you do have respect for it. You always have been that way.
Oh, didn't you discover it there that day?
It was unbelievable. They do rehearse, but... The rehearsals are there. It's like a dance. It is
very much so.
very athletic. You can't be a wuss.
It's choreographed.
It's a live stunt show, but it's also like being a jazz musician in that you follow each other. I don't know what the next part of the song is, but if we're professionals and you're playing a riff, I just follow you. Okay, let's work together on this. That's the best way to describe it. Improv comedian. You just go with the flow, or an interviewer. You know?
Oh, I go with the flow.
Go with the flow.
Absolutely. I mean, like you started this, you just go with whatever.
Just go.
But what I liked was when I've asked wrestlers, are there I know it's choreographed, mm-hmm. but are there times you get pissed?
Of course.
And you break the choreography. In other words, the guy, you suddenly you're in the ring and right. you're the bad guy, you're supposed to lose.
Right.
But the good guy does something you don't like. Suddenly, you don't want to lose, right?
Well, I mean, at the highest level, not so much anymore. I mean, this is the highest level of wrestling with the WWE. But if when we were in Japan back in the old days, you're working like in a foreign country where you're the foreign menace, then it did break down a little bit sometimes because guys wouldn't want to work with you as much because you are the foreigner.
Right.
So that's when you would have a little bit more of a breakdown, you know, a little more of a shoot, as we call it.
You've been badly hurt?
Never been badly hurt so much by another guy. Aches and pains. The worst injury I had is I broke my arm with a steel plate in my arm. But that was just by trying like a wacky stunt, you know, something on those lines.
You have a steel plate in your arm?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you can hit harder.
Yeah.
<That's laughs> go with a forearm.
And people always go, does that go off when you go through the metal detector?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
No, it doesn't.
It does not.
It doesn't, unfortunately. Because it would be cool to make it kind of bionic if it would, but it doesn't. So now you're talking about running an interview, and we're talking about wrestling and how if things kind of break down. I mean, over the years, and both of you guys have your own podcast now. It's called Back and Forth with Larry and Sean King, which must be really...
Sean and Larry King, her name.
Sorry, she's first.
Learn it, first.
Of course. Learn it or she'll pin you.
And smart move, too. The fact that she's your wife, she should be first.
She's now, first in everything.
After all these years of being an interviewer, and now you have another person on the show with you, even though she's your wife, how is that having like a...
I got to tell you the truth. I've said it to her. I've said it to my father-in-law. Of all the years, about 58 years in the business,
right.
58 years of interviewing and all sorts of things and emceeing comedy shows, and I would say I'm having the most fun working with her,
mm-hmm.
and we do one a week. I would do two or three a week. In all the years I've done, I'm 81 years old. I'm having more fun with her. She's very good. She was hesitant at first, but now you haven't seen it yet, but it's about to take place. She commands it. Wait, Chris, it's going slow so far. But it's sort of like a wrestling match that started slow.
We're warming up.
So far, she hasn't said anything, but wait. It's coming. When you ask us about our kids or shoes, wait.
So is there certain things that you obviously know more about that you can take control? Certain things that Larry knows more about that you kind of sit back?
Yeah,
well,
we
I suddenly discovered, since we do this, I don't know anything about it.
Larry knows very, very little about most things.
One thing she doesn't know. I have in my head, I know what time planes are leaving. She doesn't know what time it is. She has no idea. Wall Street Journal did a whole story on people who are late, and they said it's a trigger thing.
Really?
That they don't really know what time it is. So they can't... Sean has no idea what time... For example, we're supposed to go somewhere last Saturday night at 6:30.
Right.
Right? At 5:15, she went out to buy shoes. Now, and she said, my makeup's almost done. Almost.
Okay.
You know what time she arrived?
When?
10 to 8.
No, that's not true. Totally inaccurate because we got to the second event. Larry, you're such a fibber.
You got so there.
The real story is I was supposed to stop by and say hi to a group of people before we went to Clive Davis's pre-Grammy party. So that's, you know, Clive's party is always fun, and there are a lot of photographers there, and you want to make sure that you look right.
We'll make the scene.
Yeah. So I didn't have the right pair of black pumps that went with my outfit.
Why didn't you buy them at 3 o'clock?
Because I didn't know. I didn't decide what I was going to wear.
See, that's the thing with a girl. You never know exactly what you're going to wear.
The weather was cold, and so I wasn't going to wear something really bare.
What does that have to do with the shoes?
I wore what?
What does the weather have to do with the shoes?
Everything. I would be wearing sandals, or you could be wearing closed-toed shoes.
So she didn't know what she was going to be wearing.
No, but here's the crusher. Next to Imelda Marcos, her shoe collection.
Oh, that is such
number
baloney.
One in the Western.
No, it's
anyway,
not. It
she's
is
got
not.
A lot of shoes,
no,
racks of shoes,
Larry,
boots.
Your
racks
nose
of
is
shoes.
Growing.
And
yeah.
From the male standpoint, we're looking and saying you've got 15 pairs of black shoes.
Right.
From the female standpoint, none of these shoes are the right shoes for this dress.
How do you
that
know
is
this?
So
what
right,
are you, a woman?
Chris.
I've been married for 16 years.
Chris,
so.
See? Yes, you totally get it.
Right? How long have you guys been married for?
8.
So I got double.
18. 18, yeah.
I almost had
almost.
No, but what I mean is, how could you have 40 pair of shoes, 100 pair of shoes? 200 pair of shoes and not have black shoes.
Yeah, and black pumps.
I don't have 200
I could see if you said, I don't have purple
shoes. But also, by the way, I keep my shoes because I...
Why?
When I buy them, I like them, but they go out of style. But then they come back.
Come back in style.
Pointy toes were out for a long time. But you know what they do? They trick you because the pointy toe is in style, but now the heels are different. They've got, we've either got a chunky heel or a really teeny tiny heel.
Stiletto heel.
A stiletto heel, yeah.
Now what are you, what are you, gay?
What?
How does
I'm in tune with the female persona.
No, he totally
persona.
Gets,
stiletto
oh my gosh.
Heels.
You've never heard
Your
of this
wife
thing?
Must be so happy, Chris.
You've never
you
had
get
stiletto
it.
Heels?
I don't even know what a stiletto heel is.
See, but you're 81.
You, Larry.
I'm younger, yeah. So stiletto
I was
heels
wearing stiletto
thing.
Heels last night.
They were?
Those, you know,
those
really
real
thin,
high, tiny, thin.
The ones you like. See, he calls them sexy heels.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It helps the calves and everything. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see? He kept saying, your calves look so good. Why do they look so good? It's because my toes are pointing. You
and
know,
because
I'm
you went and
shoes.
Got the shoes.
I got the shoes.
See, what I tell you, I hate to interrupt you, too, but I have a question. You'll probably know the answer to this. Who decides that pointy shoes are out?
The shoe manufacturers, because they need to sell new shoes next season.
The shoe people in Italy decide all of those things.
I think it's a guy named Murray Schwartz in the front.
Time to get rid of the chunky heels.
Points are out. Cancel points.
But speaking of shoes, we got onto this shoe thing because Larry had shoes on the brain because I told him that he needs to throw away a pair of shoes that he owns. Chris.
Okay.
I love these.
And look at the socks.
Those are kind of almost bowling shoes.
No, they're like the ugliest shoes I've ever seen in my life.
Don't unlace them.
Oh, she's taking off the shoes. Look at this.
No, don't take them off.
Here they come.
You got some nice socks on them, Larry.
They are. No, see, the socks are great, right?
Those are stylish socks.
Who got you those socks, Larry?
You did.
I did, yes, but I did not buy them.
They're gray and purple and white.
Beautiful. Argyle socks. I did not buy them.
What kind of shoes are those? What does it say in the back?
Hideously ugly.
Pantola Doro.
These were sent to me, 2 pair.
Okay.
Sent to me from Italy.
They are.
Pantofola Doro.
Yes. And the colors.
There's stars on them. They're brown and black and white and green.
And olive green.
Very bowling shoe-esque.
Yes.
What is that the name of the maker on the back?
Yes.
Okay, so he made them.
Pantola Doro from Italy.
So those are probably very expensive shoes.
Probably.
Probably.
They're very comfortable. And she tells me, you can't wear them anymore.
No, well.
What have I told you?
See, but this is the thing with guys, that we hold on to stuff for a long time because it fits nice.
It feels comfy. Yeah, but when you're in the entertainment business and you go on stage, the reason that I really went over the line today is that I was flipping through to look for pictures from the Grammy party.
Right.
And, you know, they have those Zimbio things and all those different Getty images.
Right.
And
wire
so
image.
Image, all that. So I flipped through, I put Larry King's name in, and he was at an event where he was on a panel. And there are all these
discussing
people.
Discussing OJ,
okay, whatever. And everyone was dressed very nicely. Larry was wearing these same pair of schlumpy jeans that have mustard stains on them. I don't know what else is on there. And these shoes, but he had a beautiful orange shirt, great tie, beautiful suspenders from the waist up. He was fantastic. And then a photographer had a close-up of Larry's ridiculously unmatching socks that were like bright orange argyle and olive green and
Larry's
brown and black.
Used to sitting behind the desk.
Right.
It's an upper body business.
Some people don't think he has legs.
Thought I didn't have legs. However, I get a lot of compliments on these shoes. So
that's
you're telling me
they're shocked,
what?
Larry. They're staring, and they don't want to be caught. And so they go, oh, those are great shoes. What they're really thinking
like
is, oh,
shoes?
My gosh.
When you get to the point of being Larry King, you kind of do what you want.
No.
Like if he's
not at home.
And not on your podcast now.
No, I used to think that I rule all I command. Mm-hmm. I command nothing. I tell you,
right. Yes.
I'm leaving here in 5 minutes. I mean, you and your beloved co-wrestler here.
Round one.
But my wife takes good care of me.
She makes you younger. I mean, obviously, absolutely she does.
Well,
you
sure.
Feel invigorated.
The frustration leads to you. Anger leads
heart rate
to you.
Increasing.
Heart rate
That's
increasing.
Right.
Blood pressure
every
increasing.
Day.
The one problem with Sean is she is not my mother.
No.
I had a mother.
I am not your mother,
Larry. That forgave
Larry.
Everything. I yes. couldn't do anything wrong. Yeah, my label is always right.
Yeah, well, you weren't married to your mother, and I am not your mother. I don't want to be your mother. So,
when you first got together with Larry, were you in broadcasting? Were you in show business at all?
I had a show called Hollywood Insider. It was on USA.
Okay, gotcha. So you knew the story, seven, 8 years somewhere.
Done a lot of sitcoms.
And I'd done a lot of acting and
So you were in the business.
And singing. Oh yeah, my dad was in the music business. He was head of A&R at Capitol.
Oh, okay,
when I was growing up,
she's a great singer. She doesn't say
the Beatles and well,
she's recorded with Willie Nelson, with Glenn Campbell. She's a great. We did a show together in Vegas where she opened and did all the singing, and I did comedy. She's a great singer. Unfortunately, she doesn't want to share it with the public. She's open for Don Rickles.
All right. Is that in Vegas?
It was in Vegas, Atlantic City. Vegas is not, you know, the show that I did in Vegas wasn't the music that I record. It was a completely different thing because it's a different audience.
What kind of stuff do you sing?
Country pop.
Well, country and country pop, yeah. So
pop country?
Pop country, yeah, Puppy country.
So you guys mentioned you went to Clive Davis's Grammy party.
Yeah,
it's like legendary. Like how
is it fun?
Is it the cool place to be?
Who was there this year that got checked out? I stayed till twelve.
Penny Marshall.
And
Lorraine Bracco.
Lorraine Bracco and
she knew everyone. Sean is the world's best.
We saw
party attendee. Sean. Oh, here's Sean. Oh hi. Hi. Oh, love seeing. Oh, Mildred. Oh, it's so good
these
seeing you
friend,
again.
These are people that I've known
for 20 years. Right.
Okay. You know, and longer.
Except she knows the room.
Some people I've known longer than you. Well.
You got to work the room. That's what a party is.
And I grew up in this business. So right. A lot of people.
I'll tell you, my highlight.
I knew Larry.
And her highlight. It was a great act. Mm-hmm. Clive Davis put on a wonderful array of singers. To me, the highlight was Johnny Mathis.
Really?
He brought back Johnny Mathis, and Johnny did 4 songs. More songs than anybody else did.
It was great.
But the opening act was, who's the singer? Sam Smith.
Oh, my gosh.
He won a bunch of Grammys last night.
What a voice he has.
Yeah, great voice.
Amazing.
I heard that tribute he did to the guy who broke up with him.
Uh-huh.
That was funny. Thanks for making my whole career. Wrote all those songs.
And didn't Adele, the guy that she did the same thing, and that guy sued her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because he lost, but he said that he was owed royalties because she wrote the songs about him.
Right. That was the Taylor Swift thing, too.
Taylor writes songs about guys.
But you're a big music fan, Larry, and I know you are.
Well, no, she's much bigger. For example, she kids me. I watched the Grammys. Mm-hmm. I understood 2 lyrics. Mm-hmm. The rest, there was way I lost. I look at the Billboard Top 100. I don't know anybody on it.
Right.
Well, if you listen to the radio, you might start recognizing some songs.
If you listen to something other
than Sinatra on Sirius.
But you know,
when Sinatra died, music died.
Well, here's one of your best shows that I loved. I want to talk to you about when Beatles Love came to
Vegas. Oh,
nice. And
was
you
so fun.
Interviewed Paul, Ringo, Yoko, and Olivia.
Widows, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was you're a big Beatles fan?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was an amazing interview with those
guys. I learned to like the Beatles.
In what way?
Well, when they came out, you know, I tended to put down all that music.
Larry was very snobby about music.
No, I was.
And still is.
Well, obviously, if you're a Sinatra fan, then you're a rock guy.
I used to kid them on the name, the Beatles. What kind of name is that? Yeah. And anyway, one day on my television show in Miami, Arthur Fiedler, the great conductor of the Boston Pops, is my guest.
Mm-hmm.
So on the air, I'm kidding with him, but Arthur Fiedler's a great master of classics and all that. And I say to him, "Hey, Arthur, what do you make of these Beatles? You know, I'm doing it like fun. What do you make of these Beatles?" he says to me, "Get this, they are the Beethoven of our times.
Wow.
Their music will be played and sung after generations have gone.
Mm-hmm.
They will live forever. And I have just recorded an album with the Boston Pops of Beatles music." And
wow.
I felt like a schmuck. I didn't know what to say.
Yeah. You should have.
He put me down. He didn't put me down. He was just saying.
Put you in your place, yeah.
He put me up. So
well,
then I started to listen
to their music.
To the music.
And you hear the beautiful changes and the chord progressions.
But I think back in
lyrics.
Those days, though, it was about the look. You looked at them as guys. Look at these hippies, the long
hair.
Arthur,
and all that.
Arthur Fiedler told me that Hold My Hand. Mm-hmm.
I want to hold your hand.
Is a great number. I thought that was crazy. I want to hold your hand.
And when I touch you, I feel happy. inside. See, there's more than just the chorus. See,
what did you think?
Lyric.
What did you think when the whole, there was basically a whole cultural shift too around that time when the Beatles came in?
I missed it. Changed society. I got to like the Beatles. I like Presley, but after that, all these the modern things. When, for example, my daughter loved AC/DC when she was a teenager. That was her favorite group. They opened the Grammy show last night. Why? First of all, did anyone understand what they were doing? The drummer, I thought, was going to die of a heart attack. The trumpet player, the guitarist ran around the stage like a maniac. And I tell me
that's kind of what they do.
That's what they do, Larry.
Okay, okay. Here, you two wise guys. How old are you, Chris?
I'm 44.
And she's a little early.
She's early 30s.
Yes, thank you.
Give me.
And looks like she's early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sing. All right, guys. Sing for me an AC/DC lyric.
She was a fast machine. She kept her motor clean. She was the best damn woman that I ever seen. That's kind of like a Sinatra would be happy with that. It's kind of a Sinatra thing.
Frank a day. Frank. So, Frankie, sorry. I'm looking up.
So, but let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, you've been in the business for a long time. And for me, I know Frank Sinatra. I know how great he is, but I don't really know. He was a huge, huge Elvis Presley Beatles style star, like that big, right?
Well, he did a show with Presley when Presley came back from Germany.
But I mean, before that, like in the late 40s, Sinatra was
there was no one
the guy, right?
No one bigger than Frank.
Yeah. Right.
And in 1960s, when he resurrected his career, in the early 60s, when the Beatles came in, no one was bigger than Frank. No one.
Okay.
You were a baby.
Right, but you mean you hear about it, but because we weren't actually there, you don't really know. Like, I was never around when the Beatles were around, but you hear about it. But apparently, like, it was even bigger than when you can imagine.
Gosh. I remember my dad coming home. It freaked me out. He came because he was head of A&R. He got all the paraphernalia and all the stuff.
And your dad is here?
My dad is here, right behind us right now.
He's got a really cool cane with a sword in it.
Yes, he has a cool sword in it. So watch out, anybody who thinks they're going to get it.
That's right.
But he came to the door, and he was wearing a Beatles wig.
Okay, yeah.
And
you're kidding.
No, I haven't told you this. Yeah, we were living on Fair Avenue, and I looked through the peeper hole because, you know, I wanted to know who was at the door. He knocked because he wanted to freak us out, I think. Is that what you did, Dad? You don't remember. I remember it very well. It scarred me for life. My father, who has always had this beautiful silver hair from as long as I can remember. He got
when
it when he was
like
in his 20s. Yeah, no, truly. He started going silver really, really young. And he's got this you know, big, long Beatle thing on. But he also came home with an acetate. You're too young to know
what an acetate
would
be. The big kind of like a 3/4-inch tape.
Well, no. Acetate is a record that's thick.
Oh, okay.
That is like the
master.
It's the master. Yeah. Is that, Dad? Is that what it is? Those big thick things that you used to bring home?
Yeah, they cut a master.
Yeah, it's like the master of the LP is the acetate, right? Right. Yeah.
So and if we could find those, they're somewhere in storage. Can you imagine what those Beatles acetates are worth?
Was this when you were like a teenager? Was the Beatles your thing, or was
No. I was little. Okay.
So you're big.
I was five when the first Beatles concert happened.
Who was your big crush song when you were?
Who was my big crush
when you were like
what
a teenager?
What star?
Bay City Rollers.
Who was on your record player?
Who was on my record player? Gosh, I loved Earth, Wind, and Fire. I loved Stevie Wonder. I loved
More funk, like funk stuff.
Yeah, Chaka Khan. I loved
Sly and the Family Stone.
Yep. Yeah, probably more that. And then I got to when Willie Nelson did Stardust. That and when Linda Ronstadt. No, was it Linda Ronstadt? They both did it. That's right. Linda did the Nelson Riddle session, and then Willie did the Stardust. Anyway, I kind of went over into country and appreciated that. And so,
okay, so that was your thing.
Yeah.
So. And Larry, were you a jazz guy?
I love jazz.
Yeah, it's your thing,
like
right?
Verve, the old Verve label, and Buddy Rich and Mel Torme.
Oh, okay.
I loved all that. By the way, once the Earth, Wind, and Fire did a concert in Miami, I wasn't going. But I dropped off some people, and I left them off at the Bayfront Park Auditorium. And I'm driving out as all the cars are coming in, and I was yelling, "Go back! Go back! Wind is sick!" I thought that was funny.
Tonight, just Earth and Fire will be performing.
That's right.
Only Earth and Fire. Go back.
Larry, you've been interviewing for so many years, and then you left CNN, moved over to Oro. Now you have the podcast with Sean. What's the dynamic change when you're interviewing when you have two lead interviewers rather than we just have one? Like next time we
I've never worked with never worked with anyone else before Sean, and we do interviews together very well, I think.
I have nothing to judge from. Well, no, I did my own.
Yeah, so you never worked with anyone.
No, I never worked with anyone else either.
But I'm so used to working alone. But we work well together.
Well, plus it's your wife, so you have a good chemistry. You know,
yeah.
That's going to be.
She picks up on things very well. She's a very good interviewer herself. So, but I the difference in I'm used to working live, and we don't do this live. So I like live.
Mm.
I like the high risk of live. I like
the rush.
The rush when that light goes on and you're all over the world.
And you never know what's going to happen.
No.
Have there been some disasters during your career of live interviews that went askew?
Just a few. Not many. Just a few.
Pope.
Did anybody ever get really pissed off at you?
The Pope didn't call.
No, it wasn't the Pope. No, it was a father. It was a priest. You asked a priest a question.
Oh, that was my first dumb thing. I was just starting out at Pumpernick's. A restaurant in Miami Beach. That was my first interview. Bobby Darin was the first famous person. He just walked in. And Jimmy Hoffa came. But I had a priest
Jimmy
on.
Jimmy Hoffa?
Yeah, I knew them all. I had a priest on, and I was just a kid. I was 22. So I asked him if he had any children. And there was a whole audience there. They laughed. Now, of course, now it would be understood.
That I know of.
But no, I had Zsa Zsa Gabor say the F word.
Okay,
that's
alive.
We weren't on delay then. Now we were on 6 second delay because of that.
Well, what would happen back then if an F word escaped? Would you get in trouble? Fines?
No, well, here was the rule. If you were on the radio, this was a great rule. It's good for all of you to follow. If you're ever doing a live show and you say a curse word, I was on WIOD radio, all right? I never said a curse word on the air. But if I did, suppose I'm on WIOD. Remember the call letters, WIOD. And so I say to my guest, F you, this is WINZ Miami. Say another station.
right.
That's one of the tricks of the trade. I've never had that in my broadcast career.
Uh-huh.
I've never had a goof like that. I've never had a Brian Williams.
Where you actually said it.
I've never had that. Now, a lot of times, you know, memory can fade. I tell stories and sometimes you embellish them. But I never put myself in an airplane I wasn't in. You know, and I think he's going to have a tough time. It's all we've been talking about.
It's really sad.
And I like Brian. Right? He was the MC when I got my Lifetime Achievement Award from the Emmys, which was a great night. He even put me down a little.
And what was the story with Brian? What did he do? Just so everyone knows.
Well, he said, when at the Emmy Awards, he said, we're here to play homage to Larry King. And later on, I'll tell him what homage means.
Yeah, but what he did was,
he was in there was a helicopter fight over Iraq. He was in a helicopter 1 hour behind a helicopter that got shot up and down.
Wow.
He said he was in the helicopter that got shot up. And he's been telling the story for years. Tell it on David Letterman. He just kept the story going. Veterans were complaining. And no one listened to him. Veterans called NBC to say he was. But the other night, he took one of the veterans of one of the events to a Ranger hockey game. And he happened to mention to an interviewer, a girl does interviews. And he said, yes, I'm happy to be here with this veteran. It reminds me of the time when I was shot down in the plane, and he brought it up again, and then they went into a whole big thing. The problem he's going to have,
they went into a whole big thing?
Other veterans started calling.
The other veterans.
And
so that veteran that was there didn't say anything.
No. But he became the victim of the new internet of what is.
Right. So they found out that he was lying about it?
Twitter and
social
now,
media.
You see what they're doing on social media now? They showed me today.
What?
They have Brian Williams at the Last Supper. Brian Williams was in the car when Kennedy was shot.
No.
He was in the middle. They have his face.
Walking across Abbey Road.
Ouch.
Across Abbey Road. He's in every situation.
Yeah.
And here's the problem he's going to have. He's a nice guy.
Become Forrest Gump.
So basically it came out that he was not in the helicopter.
He was not in the helicopter.
Right.
Yeah. He was in another helicopter an hour behind him that was not. But the problem he's going to have is, I think, he's not a field reporter anymore. So he's never going to have to lie about it. He's an anchor. But let's say the story is
right.
helicopter shot down. Here's Brian Williams with the news. Helicopter shot down today in Afghanistan.
Well, let's just avoid those.
Any helicopter news, give it to
somebody.
You've got to
cover the news, right?
Bring it out.
Oh, now they've got stories about that he lied about Katrina. He was in New Orleans. Yeah. And he was in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel
in the
French Quarter.
Yeah.
And he said he looked out his window and saw a body floating by. And now everyone's in an uproar over that because that area of the thing did not flood.
Never had water.
As a journalist, isn't that the death knell? Like,
yes.
It is.
No one's ever going to trust them.
That's right.
How do you recover from that?
Because their whole campaign is trust.
Right.
Now, he's not only the anchor of the news, he's the editor-in-chief of their news.
Ouch.
So he hires and fires people.
Yeah.
He took himself off the air.
Wow.
But he said, I've ordered today to take myself. And I like him a lot, but he's got... I think the trouble is you compound a story. And now if you're doing a cable show or you're a lesser reporter, you can get away with it. The lady at CBS that they took off the air for 6 months, very pretty girl. I forgot her name.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
She told a lie story. She put up a story that wasn't true, mm-hmm. and they suspended it. It went away because she's not an anchor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But Brian Williams, see every night.
He's the talking head of the network. Yeah,
sure. So I don't see a recovery. Now, they say the story will go away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally stories do go away, but once he comes back, everyone's going to tune in. It's a story again.
Yeah.
Someone said, do you think the people at CBS and ABC are happy about this? You bet they are.
It's sad.
Well, Larry, as far as the world has changed with social media, and everybody has a phone, everybody has a recorder, everybody's
posting things. It overwhelms me. It scares me.
How is that for you in 10, 20 years to see how this has come along?
I can't. There's things I like about it and things I don't like. For example, news is instantaneous, so you get a lot wrong.
How do you mean?
It's too fast. Mm-hmm. So the idea is a lot of companies want to get it on first, rather than get it right.
Instead of doing research.
I was raised in an era where you get it right. You double check everything.
Wow.
The Post, when the Boston bombing occurred, sent a picture up of two people who didn't do it.
Mm.
But they wanted to get it right out. You want to get it right out.
You want to be first.
You want to be first rather than be right. So there's a danger in that. Now, the unbelievable part of this is there's no such thing as a newspaper headline extra where you learn something you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
If a big event happened right now, the whole world knows it in a minute because of social media.
Right.
But social media can also lie. So I could take my Twitter. I got 2,800,000 followers. I could spread a lie out today.
Yeah.
Right. And then tomorrow say, sorry, I got it wrong. But by then the damage is done.
But then you want to be right. For example, 3 weeks ago, I flew from LA to Utah, and I was on the plane with Ann Romney, Mitt Romney's wife, and she told me, we're going to decide in the next couple of weeks whether he's going to run or not.
Really?
So I put that out on Twitter. I sent that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also met her.
And then
at the
I
airport,
met her at the airport, and he said,
up.
We're going to decide.
So you had two good sources.
I had two people. Yeah, who were the Romney's
biggest sources.
Yeah.
So I sent it out. I got quoted everywhere. They're going to decide in the next 2 weeks. And Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation, the night he announced that he wasn't going to run, gave me credit that I had broken this. But supposing Ann Romney said, I never said that. Or Mitt Romney said, I never said that. I'm not deciding till June. Then I would have looked like.
Right.
And did I lie?
But when someone says that to you,
but
Larry,
I had it on pretty good credentials.
Is it on the record when they tell you this, or was it kind of like a, hey, Larry, I think I'm going to...
Well, I kind of assumed it was on the record.
You told me that they...
I said to Ann, I'm going to Twitter this, and she said, I didn't say it to Mitt, I said it to Ann, and Ann told me, when Mitt speaks, he speaks for me.
Right.
And when I speak for Mitt. We're joined at the hip.
Hmm.
Okay, so
you actually had warned her or told her.
No, I said. Oh, no, I said. Can
gotcha.
I?
Gotcha.
She said, sure.
Okay, because there have been times
I didn't tweet other things. She told me.
Okay,
right.
She told me background stories that would shock our listeners.
Larry was totally hitting on her. By the way, I get this phone call.
Oh, I want to tell you.
No, could you? I get a call from Larry.
Hand is up.
I get a call from Larry saying, "Sean, I'm running away. It's someone you know, and she's wonderful. She and I are running away together. So she just wants to say hello before we go." Hands the phone to Ann Romney. Fast forward about an hour and a half later, I get another call from Mitt, who says, "Tell your husband to keep his mitts off my wife." pun intended.
Right. Here's the weird part about Mitt.
Guilty as charged, Larry?
He meant it.
Yeah, guilty. Totally. No, Larry
actually,
was joking.
Actually, he half meant it.
Oh, no, he was not happy.
He was not happy.
No, and no.
That's why he lost.
No,
he bought
Larry.
That. He bought it. Come on, he wasn't happy. It's a joke.
I know it's a joke,
well,
but
maybe
some people don't.
Maybe it's because
you've been married 8 times that he thought you were going to make another jump. I don't know.
So you're going to Tampa alone, huh?
Flying on Southwest Airlines.
That was dirty. That was low dirty. When we go to dinner,
I'm sorry.
Go to dinner with Larry Jr. and Cannon, you will not eat.
Larry King Jr.
Larry King Jr.
You will not eat.
Okay.
And when we get up in the morning,
I'll bring snacks.
When we get up in the morning, if you get up in the morning, no breakfast for you. You're really starting to tick me off with that line. She brings it up a little too much.
So, Larry, you've been we're talking Mitt Romney in the presidential election, and what do you think is going to happen over the next couple of years as far as who's going to be the next?
Well, 2016, I hope it's Hillary versus Jeb Bush. I hope that because I think that will be then one guy a little right of center, one woman a little left of center, and it'll be an intelligent, well thought out. The debates will be very good. I don't think there'll be any backstabbing. They like each other, and they appreciate each other. And fans are both like the other person. So,
and their families are friends.
And their family. Oh,
yeah, Bill Clinton
and George Bush the first.
Since.
Bill Clinton spends a week every year up in Maine, which, as Barbara Bush says, she's a riot, Barbara.
It's Barbara
first,
Bush.
She doesn't want him to run. Uh-huh. Stop with the dynasties already. I'm sick of Bush and I'm tired of it. She's opposed. But Jeb is definitely running. That is definite. He is definitely running.
Who do you think, in your opinion, was the best president over all the years you've been
of interviewing?
Of interviewing,
Clinton, hands down.
As an
interviewer and as a president. I liked all the presidents I've interviewed, and they all have great. You don't get to be president without great qualities. You have to have great qualities to run. You have to have a lot of chutzpah to run, and then to be president. There's a great quality. Oh, I don't want that job. When you get a call at 2 in the morning, it ain't good news.
Yeah.
How many good days does a president have in 8 years? How many days do you get him and say, yeah?
3?
Yeah. You know what? There's no
the
profit.
Inauguration. And the fair.
Well, exactly right. Yeah,
a lot
see
of
you
them,
later.
A lot of them can't wait to get out.
Yeah, I'm sure. So
but Clinton
pressure.
Loved politics, and he's my wife is a Republican. I'm a Democrat, but we share a lot of things. We were at a house, a friend of ours' house, and Bill Clinton got up and spoke. He bought her. She bought it right away.
He's amazing charisma, right?
Amazing.
Off the charts. And when he talks to you,
he looks right straight
looks
in your
right
eye.
Right at you, and there is nobody else in the room. So you feel.
Isn't that amazing, that quality?
I know he has that quality.
You're the only one in the room.
Which is why he's always late. He's always late. Bill Clinton.
Because he's buying shoes?
She's Sean
I
King.
I think he's buying shoes.
If he has an appointment at 9 in the morning, his next appointment is 10, he spends so much attention on the 9 that his whole day runs late.
Okay.
We had him live on when he was running with Al Gore, and my producer at the time, Tammy, had to grab him by the collar and drag him to the set to sit him down because we're going on live. And Tammy was very tall and built strong. The Secret Service froze. She grabbed him by the neck and they froze. They didn't make a move. They didn't make a move. But Billy, he's a wonderful person. I mean, he has his fault. Everyone has faults.
Of course.
No one is without faults. But if he ran again, he'd elect him.
You think so?
Oh, come on. The public misses him.
Yeah.
And he'll campaign for Hillary. And
I wonder if she wins, how he will do as the House
how
husband.
How he fits in, yeah.
He'll be great.
First husband.
He'll travel the world.
An ambassador, yeah.
I remember once he met my daughter, Kaya. And Kaya had graduated American University. And this was up at CNN in New York. 20 minutes he spent, we were taping, thank God, or he wouldn't have made it. 20 minutes he spent with her talking about American University. He knew the president. He knew some of the teachers. Mm-hmm. He asked what were her courses. What was her goal in life? It was unbelievable. Wow. He just met this kid. He's unbelievable.
Did you ever interview a Kennedy, any of the Kennedys at all?
I interviewed Ted.
Ted Kennedy?
I met Bobby, didn't interview him. I bumped into John's car.
Rear-ended him.
Rear-ended him.
What?
He did.
Hold on. You rear-ended Kennedy's car?
Yeah. Great story.
What happened?
I was 23 years old, and we were disc jockeys in Miami Beach. Mm-hmm. And I drove, but someone had a beat-up old convertible, and we'd never seen Palm Beach. What was Palm Beach like? So we drove up A1A on a beautiful Sunday morning. Not a cloud in the sky. And it was just a gorgeous day. And we're looking at all the houses. There's no houses on the beach in Palm Beach. So you got to look to your left. There, onto your right is water. So is the Atlantic. So I'm looking up at all the houses. I'm going about 10 miles an hour. And on Worth Avenue, parked at a red light, is a guy in a convertible. Hmm. And I hit him. Bam, I hit him. And he gets out of the car, and he says, I never forget it. How could you do that? It's a beautiful Sunday morning. We're the only two people on the road. How could you hit me? I said, well, we were looking up at the houses. We'd never been here before. I said, you want to change license plates?
Yeah.
He goes, no. But all of you, raise your hand. I'm Senator Kennedy of Massachusetts, and I'm going to run in 2 years for president. Swear you will vote for me. And we all swore. That was my...
You're kidding me.
My meeting with John Young. When I told that to Ted, he laughed.
So technically, he bought your vote by not
I like the fact
suing,
that he was
right?
schmoozing 2 years beforehand.
See, well, first she hits me on the wives. Now she's knocking John Kennedy
no,
on buying votes. She never stops. The woman is a locomotive. She gets up late, but once she's up, man, it's bam, bam, bam. And when she gets
I see
a little...
The humor
I'll tell you something
there.
About her. When Sean gets a little angry, no matter what it is, it's my fault. In other words,
no,
of course, you're the husband.
If
it's your role,
Chris, that's so not true.
Well, it's pretty much it is.
No, you've been in our house.
No, but I think wives kind of have the same vibe. Yeah.
No, it's and so then I think it's a man thing. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think you guys take it on. Women can say, oh, I cannot believe that the phones aren't working today.
And, but she's, looking, she's
no,
looking straight at you.
I just looked up in the sky just now. That's what I did. So,
but I'll get that. They'll be on the road like in Europe or something. And my wife will call me. There's a cockroach in the bathtub. Why aren't you here to kill it?
That's right.
And it's I'm 2,000 miles away. Just take a piece of paper. This is a boy job.
We'll just move
Everyone
on.
Everyone gets fried. We'll move
we'll
on.
Get
move
tired.
On. So how long have you guys had your podcast for now?
6 months, is it?
No, not 6 months, not even.
4 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
Well, I'm loving it.
Who's been one of your favorite guests that you've had?
Oh, we've had a lot of good. We're
going to
have you
with,
on.
Well, Martin Short was our first.
Oh, Martin Short.
He's just great.
It's so funny.
So
in
funny.
Canada, where I'm from, he's very polarizing. People either think he's geniusly funny or not. I think he's
really?
Geniusly funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Someone
yeah.
thinks he's not funny?
A lot of people
funny.
Do. I don't understand
really?
It. I don't understand it.
Well, he's a little hip for Canada.
He'd be very hip for Canada.
You think Canada's not hip?
Some of us are. Some of us aren't.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Well, Canada is not known as hip.
I just think
you know
Canadians
why?
Are
what are you
so
about,
nice.
Eh? We're super friendly, eh? What do you mean, Larry?
Yes, you are super friendly.
The problem is they're on the border.
So?
And the country to their south
yeah.
is much more well-known. So people learn their television. They have good television, but most
great
of the shows
television.
Come in from the States. I like Canada.
I love Canada.
We go every summer. Do you know Lake Muskoka?
What province is it
in? Muskoka. It's
north of
Ontario.
Toronto.
Is it Ontario? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm from the west of that.
It's
far west.
It's a beautiful lake.
These,
a lot
of lakes.
There are three lakes. Lake Joe, Lake Rosso, and Muskoka.
That happens
all
quite a bit, though, like down here. So are you from Canada? You know Dave from Montreal?
Right.
No, it's like there's 30 million people
it's
there.
Big. It's big. Have you looked at the map lately?
Yeah, it's pretty big. Larry, we're talking about very charismatic people. Some of the people that you've had. I mean, I'm going through a big Brando phase right now. I'm sure you interviewed Brando a few
twice.
Times.
Yeah.
Charismatic guy, enigmatic, unique,
We had dinner
weird.
With him with Sean. He was a riot.
Really?
He eats off your plate if you have something he wants.
We went, after one of the interviews, this was before I met Sean, and we went to, what was that place at Robertson and Melrose?
It was Chasen's. Across from Chasen's.
It wasn't Chasen's, it was...
It was where the Vanity Fair party used to be all the time.
Yeah, that was across the street from that.
Right.
Anyway.
Where there's now a clothing store. Mm. But anyway, right.
It was a classic place.
It was one of those places.
So Brando went, and it was amazing. We announced no one that he was going. Mm-hmm. He followed me in my car, and there were paparazzi everywhere in front of the restaurant. On top, they were in trees taking pictures. We walk in, and he's... ordering, eating food at every other person's table. Gloria Allred comes over and sits on his lap. He was like unbelievable. And then he was observing people as an actor. He says, see the maitre d', unhappy. Mm. He says, see the way he walks. See that couple over there? They don't love each other. Mm. How do you know? See the way he's looking? He's over her shoulder. Mm. He's not looking at her eyes. Like I'm looking at my wife's eyes now. And I'm in love again. Even though right now she's so mad at me. Because I mentioned
it. No,
I'm not.
No, I'm not.
I want to tell you the honest truth, Jericho, and pay attention to this.
I am, sir.
As soon as we go into that hall, she will say, you had to say that.
You said nothing, Larry.
This is what happens when you work with your wife, though. You guys are always together.
We know too much about each other, too.
Right? Like, so we have that time, at home time, or like if he's at home and you're at work or vice versa, now you guys are working together and you're at home together. You're traveling to, you know, Larry King Jr., picking you up. Like, everything is together.
It's very.
But we have territorial issues sometimes. Mm. Chance will call. She's talking to Chance. She hangs up. Why don't you put me on? He called me.
Oh, he gets jealous.
You don't get jealous?
No. If Chance calls you and wants to talk to you, he's calling you.
I really don't.
No, that's true.
This is like a marriage counseling session here. Dr. Phil Jericho. Dr. J.
There's a thing called texting that you don't do.
Do
you text?
No.
Come on.
He just receives
Larry
texts.
Larry don't text.
I receive them, but I don't send them. My father-in-law's texting right now.
Why?
Everybody texts. I believe in listening to the other person. I like the sound of voices.
Yeah, but that's
I like
unfair.
Inflections. You don't know. I don't know what a text means.
You still pick up the phone and call people?
You bet.
Right. Because that's the lost art. That's something that people are not doing anymore.
It is. I agree,
my
Chris.
Larry has a flip phone from
7-Eleven.
Yes.
But the texting is ABC.
That's right.
DEF.
I don't text.
It takes eight hours.
But now, do you find, when we talked earlier about this, about the social media, how it's changed the world, people don't talk on the phone anymore.
No.
There's people that I've known for years that I just basically text.
Yeah.
And if you call them, sometimes they won't even answer. Just text you.
No, that's right. Chance was 14. Just to me right before I walked in here.
Right?
Yes, my best girlfriend. She texted me and I called her back and she didn't answer. She texted
just kept
me
texting,
back.
Right.
Yeah, like,
when Chance was 14, he went with a girl for 6 months, never saw each other.
Just texting.
They met by texting and broke up by texting. Didn't know what she sounded like.
But it's amazing. Like, just since I started on the road, let's say 20 years ago, if you were dating a girl, say, I'll call you when I get to the hotel, or I'll call you from the payphone on the road.
Yeah. From the payphone on the road. Oh, that just brings back so many.
Right?
Yes.
I called you on a payphone many times.
Yeah, no.
I romanced her on the phone.
No, but for those of
you
us
you had
who
to, that's how
remember
it was.
She was
payphones.
Hard to reach, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she was hard to reach, she wouldn't answer your call.
There are no more payphones.
You can't find them.
No. I mean, there might be. Oh, you know what? There are some at Disneyland. I found some around a corner at Disneyland about a year ago, and I took a picture and tweeted it because it was like
hotels
finding
don't.
A dinosaur.
Right, yeah, Instagram. It's like, look at this thing.
Yeah.
Hotels don't have them anymore.
No, they don't. No. Nothing like that.
But they were handy. I see that was a good thing, payphones. That was a good thing.
Yeah, and
wasn't
collect
handy
calls,
just use a cell phone,
remember?
Though?
What?
Isn't it handy just to use a cell phone?
Yeah, but sometimes it don't connect, and I'm in a bad area. You know,
you know what the best thing is? Whenever you say something, you kind of complain, you get a real Jewish accent.
That's
it's
right.
A bad area, and I can't connect.
that's my tribe.
That's my tribe. We complain.
She's a Mormon, but she just discovered, based on her father's side many years ago.
We do genealogy.
There was a Jew. And once I found out that she had some Jewish blood, I now trace the whole history of this relationship.
You feel a little safer now, huh?
Not safer. You are totally Jewish. Everything about, except church, you're totally Jewish. You're a Jewish person. You're a Jewish critic. Except for absolving your husband of all ill.
I absolve you.
That part of religion is gone.
No, she's a big supporter of mine. I will tell you this. To my face, she'll drive me up a wall. But if someone criticizes me,
yeah, she got your back.
She goes on the attack. Oh. She's vicious.
She's not vicious
with anyone but our critics.
Let me ask you this, Sean. You've been in show business for a long time. Have you ever met somebody, maybe since you started, were married to Larry, or that you were starstruck by? Is there anyone that you always wanted to meet that you finally got a chance to meet over the last little bit, or are you beyond that?
You know, from the time I was little, a baby, I was around celebrities. So celebrity, you know, actors and singers
musicians.
And all that, that was our family business.
Right.
But when I got into the politics side, where Larry really wooed me, he brought me in. I flew into D.C., and he was interviewing Yasser Arafat.
Oh.
So now all of a sudden I'm in a world that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I would say that Colin Powell, what a great, sweet man, hilarious. He used to call us up and tell us Jewish jokes.
He was funny.
I mean, tell us a joke, hang up.
Right.
Colin Powell. We were invited. This is a nice honor. We were invited to the birthday of Ben Franklin. Mm-hmm. It was a dinner at the White House. Only 60 people, 6 tables, 10 at a table.
Wow.
She sat at Bush's table. Hmm. I didn't.
Senior or junior?
She sat.
Junior.
Bush, 43. She sat at Bush's table. He asked a question like, what are you reading? She said, keep a journal. He never forgot that. And he told her that he listens to her record when he works out. Hmm. And now, you don't get that every day as a citizen. Another time, this also involves Bush. She can tell you the story. Laura Bush and I are doing an interview at Christmas. She's showing me the White House at Christmas. And for the last 10 minutes, George is going to come up and come on the interview. Mm. Sean is there with our two little boys. They were how old? Three and two?
2 and 3. Both still, they were in three-piece suits, though.
With diapers.
With diapers.
And she's downstairs.
And both of them at that moment said, Mom, and they were just,
They're going to call you up. They're ready to come up to take. George is waiting.
They're potty training. They're potty training. And right at the moment where they said 5 minutes, both boys go, Mommy, I have to go number 2. Not pee-pee.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have said, just go in your pants.
Right. They're going to explode.
Right. But I was like running around looking for,
we're upstairs
bookcases
waiting.
That would open into a bathroom. And they were also at a stage where they had to take every stitch of clothing off. If they were going to go number 2, everything goes off. Socks, shoes, everything.
Yeah.
So imagine, I've got 5 minutes to get 2 kids going potty, and how do you say hurry?
Did you get it done?
No, I did. I shook his hand and I went, no, I'm kidding.
Forgot to wash it.
I washed my hands.
The Secret Service had to find the bathrooms, right?
Yeah, no, they were very helpful.
That's the true superpowers of a mom. Like, a guy could not do that, but a mom is like, get down to business.
I couldn't.
Done. Finished.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I'd be panicking. Just leave it. Just don't do it. Just hold it.
Ten minutes later, on the front portico of the White House, they're having a snowball fight.
Were you ever starstruck by anybody?
Sinatra. Only because I grew up standing on line at the Paramount, and Jackie Gleason got him for me. And when he came and did an interview, and then we got friendly at the end. I did his last interview he ever did.
Really?
We were at his funeral. I wish Sean had met him. He would have had her record with him on a duet album. That was the greatest funeral ever.
Sinatra? Why do you say that?
The casket was in the middle of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
His piano player was playing all Sinatra songs as you walked in. We sat with Victor Moon and Nancy Reagan. Mm-hmm. It was the eulogies were terrific. And the casket wasn't up front, but in the middle of the aisle. And then as everyone walked out, they shone a spotlight on the casket and they played, Put Your Dreams Away for Another Day.
Hmm.
It was a well-produced funeral.
Sure, star-studded as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was mobbed. There was paparazzi all across the street up on scaffolds.
You mentioned Nancy Reagan. What was Ronald Reagan like?
I enjoyed him. I had some interesting times with him. Nancy's our friend. We got a caller.
I know we do.
But I interviewed Reagan, talked about being shot and everything. And then one time, Nancy and Ronald Reagan invited me to join them for lunch at the Bel Air Hotel. And so I went to their house in Bel Air, and the Secret Service then drove us, the three of us, to the Bel Air Hotel. And we walk in, and a wedding is about to take place. And we became part of the wedding party. And Ronald Reagan walked the bride down. I walked down with the father, and Nancy walked down with the best man or someone, and we were all part of the wedding party. And it was just so human of him. And then I never forget, when we ate the lunch, he had a hot fudge sundae, and he had two of them. And he just kept gobbling up. He loved that hot fudge sundae.
Like sweets.
And she was like in the third row at his funeral. Really? I was announcing outside. I was broadcasting. It took 3 hours to get from the airport to the funeral. She's inside in the third row, and I'm standing sweating outside doing a broadcast with no commercials.
We decided. The funeral was outside, too.
Yeah, but outside. You had a nice seat and up on the...
Yeah, no, there was a nice breeze going through. It was...
Man, and the stories that you guys have is amazing.
I could think of this, yeah,
you know?
Sean.
I mean, you could just sit here for hours. I know we've been talking for a long time.
Later. An hour we've been talking.
An hour, I know. I just want to ask you, I mean, I don't even know if you can even answer this, but of all the interviews you've done over 40, 50, 60 years.
58.
Is there one that stands out or a couple stand out? That if I said, what's the interview that you remember the most? What comes to your mind?
Too many.
Yeah.
But if I threw things out, would be Brando, Sinatra, Mandela, Malcolm X, seven presidents, Al Pacino.
Pacino stands out?
Oh, yeah. What a great interview.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest guys on the face of the earth, right?
Yeah.
Is Al Pacino funny?
He's funny. You'd think of him as being kind of serious. Yeah. Kind of that.
He's a riot.
That dark, you know, heady, actory guy.
Some guys are like that. They come out of the show. And, right.
Yeah. We went to see him in Glengarry Glen Ross on Broadway. It was great. Then it's all went to dinner after, and he regales you with stories. And
so many.
He's just funny. And he did a poem at our wedding party.
Oh. He recited, yeah.
Did you ever interview Michael Jackson?
No, I spent time with him, and I got honored by Jesse Jackson at a dinner. I got the award, and Michael went up on stage with me to help present the award.
I was with Michael at Miko Brando's wedding at Michael's house.
Oh, wow.
And, oh, wait a minute. And you were with another man, right? You were with the midget.
Yes, Larry.
She's with Michael Jackson.
It was before I married you.
She dated a small guy. I always call him the midget.
With the midget?
He was a midget.
Oh, my gosh.
You know why she liked him? Dominatrix.
No.
She got the whip out and he begged for mercy.
You guys are a trip, man. You guys are amazing. It's back and forth with Sean King.
Yeah, put the right emphasis.
I'm going to say back and forth with Sean King in very small letters plus Larry King.
There you go.
You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. You're really terrific.
You do a wonderful podcast. Yeah. Now you got to come on our podcast.
I would love to.
We'll find out all about you. I have lots of questions for you.
Here's the thing about a good podcast, and it's something that I learned from actually working with you. Podcast or an interview is not a history lesson. It's just a conversation. Yeah. Wherever it goes, it goes. And that's the best. This has been amazing. It's been so much fun. So I'd gladly reciprocate.
Thank you. Okay, now
take them.
Boom. You're going down, Chris.
Ow, Sean, let go.
Okay. Thanks to the legendary Larry King and his hilarious wife, Sean. They were great guests. And man, talk about prestige for me by just having him on my show. Can you believe it? I mean, that's a Hall of Famer right there, man. A Hall of Fame broadcaster. One of the most legendary of his time in history. And here he was on Talk is Jericho. I hope to follow in his footsteps someday. And I thank you. And even just the fact that he's married to like a woman in her, she looks like she's in her 40s. She's probably in her 50s. Larry's in his 80s. Good on you, Larry. Yeah. You fox, you. Speaking of foxes, I got nothing to say about that. I got no segue here. But I do want to talk about Fozzie, which is almost like a fox. I guarantee we will rock your socks off on the Slash mini tour. Starts May 18th in Chicago. 21st in Austin, Texas, 22nd Beaumont, Texas, 23rd House of Blues in Houston, 24th at the Southside Ballroom in Dallas. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information on that. We got shows coming up in Iowa. We got shows in Montreal. We got some bunch of stuff coming up in Canada, mostly on the east part. And then, of course, the big one, October 30th, we are rocking the Kiss Cruise. That's right. Fozzy got the invite to join the Kiss Cruise 5, October 30th to November 3rd, sailing from Miami to Jamaica. It's going to be huge. Jericho, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons. I am excited, man. I'm going to have a fruity drink with Paul Stanley on the deck of the ship. Talk about Led Zeppelin, man. Talk about the Beatles. Cool, cool stuff, like talking about Yoko Ono when I heard her pee. When I high-fived Paul McCartney, offered to be his pro security, and he was like, who are you? Are you trying to be the security of the cameraman? I'm still not sure exactly what that meant. Lots of great episodes if you haven't listened over the last few weeks. The Monday Night Wars, Bischoff versus Pritchard. It's a must for any wrestling fan. It was amazing. The Bob Rock episode for Metallica fans and music fans was off the chain. William Regal, hilarious. Team Tiger Awesome with Nick Mundy, my partner in crime on Nothing to Report. Like I said, do me a solid. Go check that out now. And do me a solid and do all of your shopping online on the Amazon links and support my show, okay? You know how to do that. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keeper Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Eh? Then you click on the Amazon link and you can go shopping in the UK, the USA, the Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show, so we keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just getting your shopping done. You're helping me out in the process, okay? Thanks to all my great sponsors as well, proflowers.com, vegas.com, DDP Yoga, True Car, and of course, Amazon. Okay, don't forget as well, Thursday night after SmackDown, it's Jericho versus Stephanie McMahon, live with Chris Jericho, returns on the WWE Network. I'm excited about it. Got lots of big things coming up. I'm not sure how many more Live with Chris Jericho's I'll be able to do. So check out Stephanie McMahon. And then the next couple weeks, you're going to hear a lot of big, big announcements. All right. And big guests coming up too. I'm constantly tracking guests. I've got so many shows in the can, but I've got some of the greatest, most influential, funniest people on the planet lined up for all of you. And I don't know if this next guy on Friday matches up to any of those words. I don't know if he's any of those things, but he is a huge star in the WWE that just returned to the WWE. I'm talking about Sheamus in his podcast debut, at least on the major podcasts. And don't email me or DM me or tweet me and go, he did a podcast in Glasgow in 2005. I'm talking about podcasts on the major level. Sheamus will be here to rock with you and tell you all the tales of how he came back to the WWE, how he got there in the first place. We'll talk about his great hairstyle as well, okay? Lots of stuff coming up. Stay hard, stay cool, be safe, be heavy, guys. You know I love you, man. I love to love you. You got that? Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.